Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. Not so many years ago, Erica Mather was among the most popular performers on the jazz circuit in Madison. Her piano, singing, and composition work led to a couple of albums and brought her to venues around the state. But Mather moved to New York for graduate school and then found herself taking on a different calling, that of an instructor in a highly specialized, highly intense practice called Forest Yoga, named for its founder, Anna Forrest. Mather's work has boomed, and her practice was featured in a story in the New York Times not long ago. Erica Mather was back in Milwaukee earlier this spring for a local workshop, and she stopped by the Lake Effect studio then to explain a bit more about what she does. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you so much, Mitch. I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you here. How do you describe the significance of forest yoga within the overall practice of yoga?
Forest yoga is a modern update to an ancient practice. And certainly there are many modern incarnations of yoga, but specifically what forest yoga aims to do is to help people heal. So my teacher, Anna Forrest, saw that yoga was missing some particular things that help people heal in the context of modernity. So there are very specific psychological disorders that we have in modernity. There are very specific physical ailments that we suffer in modernity. And she created this practice in order to address some of those things very specifically.
Well, talk about what some of those things were.
So some of the things that she really taps into are neck and shoulder problems that people have from doing things like sitting in chairs for 18 hours a day and hand and wrist problems. So she has a very specific approach to the physicality in order to help people heal those physical problems. And she herself has a lengthy history of trauma. And so the sorts of trauma that probably, again, weren't present, or maybe they were, I don't know, but, you know, eating disorders, drug use. So she also crafted a language around yoga in order to help people heal the tears in the fabric of the human spirit.
From my reading, it also seems like this is not yoga for the faint of heart. To accomplish this healing, it requires a fair amount of work.
It does. And any healing, I think, does require work, which is part of the problem, I think, of our health system these days is we have a very strong sort of Band-Aid pill approach. But if you want to experience anything that runs deeper than skin or surface level, that you have to apply yourself some. Forest yoga is transformative. It's a deep practice, but it also has a lot of playful elements. And I think that it's a practice that's well-suited for beginners, for people who have injuries, for people who have been practicing for a long time and are looking for a deeper, more satisfying approach. And it also has some very, very strong advanced aspects to it. So for people who are interested in advanced yoga asana as well as in advanced spiritual techniques, there's something there for them as well.
Well, and so for people who are maybe not as familiar with the unique disciplines within yoga, can you speak to how yoga as it's practiced within forest yoga differs from the other kinds of relatively common yogas that people might practice in a city like Milwaukee?
Yeah, sure. So forest yoga has a very specific sequence, and sequence refers to the way that you order a class. And so some things that we do that I don't see happening as broadly in New York City, for instance, I'm not as familiar with Milwaukee, sure, so I can't speak to that directly, but there is a very strong pranayama practice, and the pranayama happens first. It's not peppered throughout the class. It doesn't happen last. It happens first. We have a very strong floor sequence, so there's always, you know, lying around on the floor and stretching at first. However, it's not really lying around. It's a very focused, disciplined approach to stretching. So there's always pranayama, always a floor sequence. And then what forest yoga is sort of famed for is her abs. So we will always be doing core exercises. And the core exercises come at the beginning of class instead of at the end, because the philosophy is that if you warm the human body from the core first, it does a few things. It preps your central skeleton to be more intelligent, move more smoothly. It heats you from the inside out, not from the outside in, which also then helps you to avoid injury. So Very rarely. I mean, I've never heard anybody say, I really got hurt in that forest yoga class.
What do you see as its potential and what do you see as its limitations?
I'm sure there are limitations because there's always limitations to every method. But what springs to mind more is the limitations are probably around appealing broadly to a lot of people. Right? What I find is it's a very specific kind of person with a very specific aim that comes to forest yoga.
Well, talk about that specific kind of person and the specific aim. I mean, healing broadly, but is there something, you know, there are a lot of things people could do to heal.
Yeah. It's a psychosomatic approach. And so I was debating with a student recently about the merits of, for instance, psychotherapy and versus, you know, some of the people in my collegial group my cohort will say, all I really need to do is practice my yoga. I tend to disagree. I think that we exist at a very unique aspect of human history where these Eastern philosophies are coming west, and that the best of psychotherapy and the best of yoga can commingle in order to help people realize greater potential, happiness, peace, satisfaction at a greater and deeper level. So, you know, the kind of person who I see comes to it is someone who is looking for something more than getting in shape. And sadly, what I see happening in New York is that yoga is turning into this exercise regime. And, you know, I go to my classes and I keep telling – I teach forest yoga and I also teach more general practice called vinyasa practice. And keep telling my students, you know, yoga is a contemplative practice. It's not an exercise regime. But it really has some great benefits as an exercise regime. So usually that's the way people get hooked in first is they hear about this yoga. They hear that it should make you relaxed. But for people who are looking to lose weight or burn some calories or whatever, forest yoga might not attract them. It might not be the thing that's going to appeal to them. Forest yoga is well known for a certain depth of intensity. So we get in forest yoga what we affectionately call intensity junkies. And those people tend to come and really dive deep into the practice. But it's a certain kind of intensity junkie. It's not a type A, I'm going to run 30 miles today, bike 50. It's a different sort of intensity junkie.
You have been a yoga teacher since I think it was 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And a practitioner for another, is it 5 years before that?
Sounds about right.
A
2003,
few years,
2002, something like that.
What drew you so strongly to it in those years between, say, 2002 or 2003 and 2007, such that you decided that this was what you wanted to spend your life doing?
I developed adult onset migraines in my mid-20s, and I was urged to find a yoga practice to help remedy these. So I practiced in part because of that suggestion. But I also practiced because I landed in a forest yoga class and it spoke to a part of me that I didn't know really was A, that it existed, or B, that it was undernourished. And that was really, in fact, the spiritual aspect. I mean, I was introduced to a relationship with body that was completely foreign to me. And then when I left Madison, I went to Columbia for graduate school, and yoga was my sanctuary away from graduate school. So once a week, I would go and practice. And that really kept me going. And then when I decided not to continue with my PhD program, I went to the forest yoga teacher training. And I was kind of in this sort of limbo zone, and I went to the teacher training not because I anticipated being a yoga teacher, although I do have a lengthy history of teaching overall since my teens. I went just to have the experience, really. And then while I was in the teacher training, I didn't have any better idea, quite frankly. And it spoke to me so strongly. I thought, I really can't think of anything better to be doing with my time at this moment in time than to help people feel better. You know, and so I went back from my teacher training, which was in Boston, and I went back to New York and immediately hit the ground and started looking for places to teach and focusing on getting full-time teaching. It took me about 8 months to go from a class and a part-time job at Penzi Spices in Grand Central Market It took me 8 months to get enough work to let go of that part-time gig and go full-time yoga teaching.
Well, also, let's go back to the point before you were teaching Forest yoga. You were a jazz musician. You've taught music and composition. You've taught sailing and windsurfing. Is there maybe I'm attaching too much to it, but I wonder if there is a meditative quality in all of those things that they have in common, perhaps?
Absolutely. I don't think that's attaching too much at all. And I think actually that there's a few through lines through all of my activities. And one is, yes, there's a meditative component, which I didn't really think about. Practicing your skills on the piano is very meditative. Writing music is a very spiritual sort of meditative quality. Racing sailboats is so much fun. It's like being on a 3D chessboard. And being out and sailing is very – I think it's very spiritual too. And then, of course, there's this meditative component to the physical action of yoga. So there's that's there. And I think also there's a certain creativity to it, which is present in all of them. And also – I get very involved in the things that I do. I've sort of sourced it to my Scorpio nature. I get very focused and very passionate and kind of go in all the way. But then there's a real wholehearted desire to share what I have realized and what I've learned with other people that then turns into things like teaching or writing articles or creating curriculum. And so there's definitely a few very strong through lines through all of those activities.
Well, and I imagine even though you are teaching Forest yoga, you can't go from being a jazz musician to not being a jazz musician just because your full-time job is teaching yoga. How do you think your yoga practice might have influenced who you are as a musician?
I think that when I started practicing yoga, it made me more contemplative, actually, and made me more aware of creative processes in new ways. And although I can't really articulate at this very moment how the two inform one another, they definitely do. And I wish I could pull this apart in more depth because I think that it is a vastly actually underexplored domain. And potentially because it's hard to explore. Yoga practice helped me think more about how I was using my body. So it informed my physicality at the piano. And it gave me a space away from practicing in which to percolate creatively. And I definitely still use my yoga practice in this way, even though I'm not currently composing. That if I have – I call it problem process. If I have a conundrum in my life, I will go onto my yoga mat and sit down with a pad of paper next to me and turn on some music and just kind of just be like, okay, here I am in this open field, in this open space where I don't have any responsibilities. I don't have any outcome that I am searching for. I am just trying to hook into myself creatively to find answers. And I think that that's a real strong creative process that helps people be creative. And certainly there are notable creatives who have strong yoga practices, notable musicians who have strong yoga practices. John Coltrane had a yoga practice. Bono has a yoga practice. Sting has a very widely publicized yoga practice, maybe a little over-publicized, and also I think it taps into the creativity around business, which I also have a very strong entrepreneurial streak. And so looking at the way that business people use yoga as a creative wellspring and a way to replenish themselves around the energy that it takes to be entrepreneurial. Who comes to mind? I'm spacing on his name. Virgin Records.
Richard
Branson.
Thank you.
Richard Branson, has a practice. And when he says, what is the most important thing that an entrepreneur must do? He says, have an exercise practice. He swims around his island once every morning. Not everybody has an island you can swim around, alas. But there is definitely a very strong tie to that.
And if nothing else, we can all dream about having our own island to swim around.
Of course, yes. I will take naps and dream about swimming around my island.
Well, it's fascinating stuff. Erica Mather, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Mitch. It's been a pleasure.
Wisconsin native Erica Mather is an instructor in forest yoga based in New York. There are links to more about her work, her video blog, and the New York Times feature about her from WUWM.com. Before she was a yoga instructor, Mather was a jazz musician. We're hearing from her CD, The Millennium Song Cycle, a song called March. Our interview first aired, coincidentally, in March. We'll take one last break and then return with celebrated cook and author Nigella Lawson. Her newest cookbook is Nigelissima, and it celebrates Italian home cooking. Lake Effect will be right back. You're listening to Milwaukee Public Radio. ¶¶